Welcome to the Live Like It's True podcast, where we look at some of the most interesting and astonishing stories of the Bible and ask, how can we live like this story is true? I'm your host, Shannon Popkin. I'm an author, a speaker, and a Bible teacher. And here on the podcast, I'm inviting you to drink deeply of the true story of the Bible and live like it's true. I'm so excited to tell you about my two new books launching this spring. And here in the podcast, I'll be hosting two series in correlation with each of these books. So first, we'll do the Sarah series, and we'll look at the life of Sarah in Genesis 12 through 21, which is the topic of my brand new Bible study, Shaped by God's Promises, Lessons from Sarah on Fear and Faith. I love this story of the Bible, and I can't wait to dive in with you, both in the pages of this new book and here on the podcast. My second book launching is Comparison Girl for Teens. So excited about this book, co-authored by my dear friend, Lee Nienhuis. We poured our hearts into this super fun and truth-packed resource that we know is going to help so many teens find freedom from the comparison trap. So here on the podcast, we'll be doing a comparison series, looking at how Jesus compared in a completely different way. I hope that every one of these amazing conversations will inspire you to better know the story, share the story, and live like the story is true. In these early episodes of the Sarah series, I'm talking with four women whose stories were highlighted in my new Bible study, Shaped by God's Promises. I'll be weaving thoughts from throughout Sarah's story, found in Genesis 12 through 21, into these conversations. And then later on in the series, we'll return to our more typical format and talk through Sarah's story scene by scene. I just know you're going to want to hear each one of these conversations with Bible teachers Courtney Doctor, Ann Swindell, Carol Kent, and others. So today we're in part two of a conversation with Jill Savage. Jill is an author and speaker. She hosts the No More Perfect podcast, which I had the privilege of being a guest on. And she's the author of 14 books, including No More Perfect Marriages. She and her husband, Mark, live in Normal, Illinois, and they have 5 kids and 6 grandchildren. And they now have various marriage courses and do marriage coaching, which might surprise you if you heard part one of our conversation, where Jill was telling about coming home from an event late at night and discovering her husband's affair. It was a heartbreaking story. You'll definitely want to go back and listen to part one of our conversation titled, When He Lies and Betrays, One Woman's Story of Redemption. But the redemption part is actually in this part of the conversation, and I cannot wait to share it with you. So here's part two of my conversation with Jill Savage.
I mean, I remember it was the day after I had discovered the infidelity. I was begging God, what do you want me to do? I don't know what to do. And I only heard one thing. And it wasn't an audible voice, but it was a thought that came to my mind that I knew was not mine, because it was anything but what I was feeling.
Yeah.
Because what I heard was, I want you to love him. Mm. And I just was like, I mean, I remember initially I was like, you have to be kidding me, right, God? Because yeah. I don't know if you've noticed, he's not real lovable right now. Mm-hmm. And God whispered back to my heart, you know, Jill, sometimes you aren't either. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what, Lord, you love me when I'm unlovable. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do that. I only know how to love someone who's loving me back.
Right.
I don't know how to love when it's not being reciprocated. And God eventually took me to Romans 12, 9 through 21. Mm. I call it the unhumanable love section of the Bible.
Unhumanable.
Uh-huh. Like unhumanable.
Not humanly capable.
Possible.
Okay.
Yep. Not exactly. And that word came up one day after we were separated, and I was talking with Mark one day, and he said, he just blurted out, I don't get you. You have treated me so kindly, and I have treated you so poorly. I don't get that. And I thought for a moment, because God was really a place that God was growing me is I had been quick with my tongue and he was slowing me down, measuring my words. I was not speaking unless God gave it to me. And so I was just real quiet in that moment. And I was like, Lord, I don't even know how to respond to that. And the only words that came to my mind is I said, I don't know, Mark, it's unhumanable. And he goes, what? What was that word? And I said, I don't know. It just came to my mind. It's unhumanable. You can't do it in your own human strength. It's only because of God.
And what, you know, what I hear, you ask God, what should I do? Right? Isn't that was your prayer? What should I do? What should I do? I think that's so common. My friends who are going through marriage difficulties, what I hear them asking over and over is, what should I do? And God told you to do something that looked impossible, right?
Yes.
It was impossible. And that's, I mean, that's what I see in Sarah's story as well. God asked her to do something that was impossible.
Yes.
To have this baby was impossible. And even to sleep with her husband in the hopes of having this baby was impossible. I often say, like, you know, it wasn't readily apparent why Sarah belonged in Hebrews 11. You know, it's this chapter where we're hearing all these great things that people did. You know, Noah built his boat and Daniel shut the mouths of the lion. You know, these great things people did. Well, Sarah didn't do anything. She had a baby. Like, if you've had a baby, you know, like, there's not, you just eat and sleep and the baby grows, right?
Right.
So she didn't do, but then I had this thought, well, she did have to do something.
Right.
And it is right after this story we're talking about, where she's been in the palace of this king, like right after she's released, that she sleeps with her husband and becomes pregnant. And I imagine it felt impossible, but I just want to read this verse from Hebrews 11:11. It says, by faith, even Sarah herself, when she was unable to have children, received the power to conceive offspring. Since, that word since, it's sort of like an explanation.
Yeah.
Since she considered the one who had promised was faithful.
Yes.
So Sarah, if you look carefully at this verse, it says, by faith, Sarah, the verb is received power.
Yes.
This was something she had done many times. You know, slept with her husband, but she received the power to conceive. And we want to be women who receive power to do these amazing things that we, these impossible things that we cannot do. And so, you know, what's behind this power? She considered the one who had promised was faithful.
Yep.
Was that part of your story too? Like, to love your husband was impossible, but did considering God's faithfulness, did that help empower you to love him?
Absolutely. And the way I also describe it is, are we going to look at the mountain or are we going to look at the mountain mover? Because the mountain was huge and it looked absolutely impossible. But the mountain mover, all things are possible with him.
Yeah.
And so, and honestly, at this point, Shannon, I really wasn't sure I was going to get the ending I was hoping for, because I was standing for my marriage, right? I'm believing that if my husband will return to his God, he will return to his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm believing that, but there is no evidence, none. And in fact, he's pulling farther and farther away, even so much that my Christian friends, my Christian counselor, at some point start to say to me, Jill, it's probably time for you to start thinking about a future that looks very different than what you want it to look like.
Give us the time frame. Like, how much time before?
At that point, that was a year from the beginning of the emotional affair. It was just short of a year.
Okay.
You know, so when I would ask God what to do, I didn't feel like he had released me from our marriage. But at the same time, I was starting to prepare my heart for the possibility that I might not have a choice.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jill, because I think sometimes when we talk about God and his promises, there is this danger in claiming promises that don't belong to us. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
I think,
yes.
You know, we believe that God can do something in the here and now, but really most of our promises are anchored in what he will do in the there and then. Mm-hmm. Like he can do anything he wants, and he is the mountain mover. He can mm-hmm. do it. You know, I wish, Jill, that I, you know, if I had been your friend, if I had been Becky mm-hmm. in the middle of the night, you know, I would have wanted to turn my Bible to a verse that says, Jill, this verse promises you your husband will return and your marriage will be restored. I think we all want that verse, don't we?
We do.
We all want to know that God is going to say yes.
Yeah.
To whatever it is that we're begging him for. But we don't have that verse. That we just Mm-mm. don't have a lot of promises that have to do with the here and now. We have promises that God will be with us, that he will yep. care for us, that he will hold us. He'll be the anchor for our souls. There's like a separation. There's the here and now promises that mostly have to do with like the intangible part of me, you know, my mm-hmm. heart, my faith, mm-hmm. like these intangibles, the promises mm-hmm. then and there, that has to do with like heaven is eternal, but it's also real. Like we're going to, mm-hmm. there are places we're going to walk with our feet and we're going to see with our eyes and we're going to taste and we're going to experience in the there and then. So then what do we do in the here and now? Like, I don't think it's right to just despair and say, well, you know, he could. I don't know if he will. I love the fact that you were holding both in your hands. He can. I don't know if he will. He can. And you talked about the mountain and the mountain mover. I like to think of it like, think of like a teeter-totter.
Mm-hmm.
And on one side are all the reasons to doubt. And on the other side are all the reasons to have faith. And you had, mm-hmm. you had this side with all the doubts. Like you had a year now of mm-hmm. tangible evidence. His heart is hard. He is not responding the way we hope. Like you had a lot of stacked up. That's why people are saying, I think, mm-hmm. live in the real world. But then on the other side, you had all this tangible evidence of what? What about God helped give weight to your faith? God's promises are like a set of parentheses. The first one is when he makes the promise. The second one is when he keeps it. And you never have one without the other. But often there's this long stretch between the two, much longer than we first imagined, right? That's what we see in Sarah's story found in Genesis 12 through 21. God promised a son, but in this wide stretch between the parentheses, she wondered, would God keep his promises? Could he? I'm Shannon Popkin, inviting you to come find the answer to those questions, both for Sarah and yourself, in my brand new 6-week Bible study titled Shaped by God's Promises, Lessons from Sarah on Fear and Faith. Find out how you too can be shaped by God's promises in the waiting.
Well, you know, in John 5, it says, my father and I are always at work. So I had no doubt, like when you just said, on one hand, I was like, he can, but I don't know if he will. I believe he was. The question is, was my husband going to respond to it?
Mm.
God's chasing him. Mm. I have no doubt. I know that. But is my husband going to respond to the chase?
Yeah.
I don't know. The pursuit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he will. And that is where I had to hold both parts, because would God heal us? Absolutely. He already was working on it. The question is, was Mark going to respond to the invitation of healing?
So you're saying your faith was weighted in what God, you knew God was at work. You knew God was powerful
yes.
enough. You already saw evidences of him at work. The only unknown is how your husband
is going to respond. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so even if Mark hadn't responded to me, that would not have been that God wasn't willing to heal it. I yeah. believe that Mark would not have been willing to engage in the healing.
Yeah.
And so that's very different. It's also what we believe about God. You know, I was raised in a Christian home, a Christian family. You know, I even look back and my mom always subscribed to Guidepost magazine. And it was in our bathroom. And I remember that we would sit and I would read And I remember His Mysterious Ways was a section of Guidepost, and it was God stories. It was about these God stories. Yeah. So I really believe that that was kind of seeded in my heart.
Wow.
That, hey, this can happen. This may happen.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible. So I had very much a possibility mindset as it related to God.
I love the part where the visitors to Abraham and Sarah, they ask, is anything too difficult for God?
Yes.
Or, you know, I think a better translation is anything too wonderful for God? Like, mm-hmm. is there anything that he can't do? And the answer is no.
No.
And so, and like what that verse that we just read in Hebrews 11, she considered him faithful, the one faithful who had promised. Like, that's you. You're considering, you're stacking up all the evidence. You have the stacks of Guidepost magazines filled right. with story after story after story of what God has done in people's lives. And I think that is so important. I have a friend who we were talking about her marriage recently, and she's very discouraged. And I said, how are you praying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does your prayer sound like? And she says, I'm praying, God, do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a little tone of resignation, you know, in mm-hmm. her voice. And I said, well, are you praying that God will heal your marriage? She's like, you know, that's really hard to do because there have been so many disappointments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you ever face that in your struggle?
Oh, yeah. And there was a point right before Mark made his U-turn, which was miraculous, Shannon. I mean, literally in 1 minute, he was telling me he was filing for divorce that week. And literally 3 minutes later, he was praying a prayer of surrender. So what just happened? I don't even know what just happened here. But I will say there was a point I was thinking, do I even want my marriage to make it?
Mm, yeah.
This is really hard. And would it be better? And quite frankly, I mean, Mark was raised in, and he speaks very openly about this, but he was raised in an abusive home. Mm. And so his childhood was very difficult. You know, we all bring junk in the trunk to marriage. Okay, we all do. But the way we describe it when we teach on it is that, you know, I brought 5 suitcases of junk in the trunk into our marriage, and he brought 5 semi-loads of suitcases of junk in the trunk.
Oh.
And so
that's a lot to unpack. That's a lot to go through and get rid of.
It is. And so needless to say, it had not always been easy because of the pain, the level of pain he had experienced in his upbringing. So there was that time where I questioned that. But I'll tell you what my number one prayer was. It was really interesting because several years earlier, Jennifer Rothschild had spoken at a Hearts at Home conference. And if you don't know who Jennifer is, she's an author, a speaker, a musician, and she happens to be blind. Yeah. Blind. Mm-hmm. And so she was speaking as it related to her blindness, but she said, you know, it is not well with my circumstances, but it is well with my soul. Mm-hmm. And I remember her saying that. And I remember thinking, oh, that's a neat little phrase. And I remembered it like it was a sticky statement, right? And it stuck in my head, but it didn't apply to me at the time because it was well with my circumstances. Mm-hmm. But God brought me back to that message in the middle of my mess. And my prayer became, Lord, it is not well with my circumstances, but I am determined it needs to be well with my soul. Mm-hmm. So please grow me, change me, mold me, do whatever you need to do in me, because whether my marriage makes it or not, I have some growth to do. Mm-hmm. And so that, I would say that prayer really kept me steady mm-hmm. of believing that whether I was going to get the end product, mm-hmm. there was still value in the journey. And it's part of the reason that my husband and I created an online course. It's called The Weight Is Not Wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's designed for people who are in the middle of waiting, particularly for a spouse to reengage or waiting through a difficult season, because it's like, this is prime opportunity for your personal growth.
Absolutely.
And so that really became my prayer. And I would say that's probably a big part of what helped me steady too.
I see that in Sarah's story as well. I mean, God could have given her this baby, month after he promised, right?
Right.
When they left the earth, I think that's probably what she had in mind. Like, we're going to move and I'm going to get pregnant on the way and we're going to build a house there. I'm going to have lots of babies. You know, I think that's probably what she envisioned, not living in a tent for 20 some years and waiting until she was almost 90 years old.
Yep.
Right. And yet it was not well with her circumstances. And especially, I think this situation, this is such a key part. I think I don't hear as many people emphasizing, I think because it's the second round for Sarah being taken into the king's palace. We're kind of like, well, it's just a repeat story. But because of where it falls on the timeline, you know, I think this is the story. This is the hinge in the story, where God is really pressing. He's testing. Abraham's just failed this test. And we know that if you look at the timeline, I mean, she's probably in Abimelech's household for about 3 months because we know they had infertility problems. So that takes more than a couple months to realize, like, oh, we got infertility issues. So at least 3 months, she, like, probably a couple weeks before she's taken into this is when God came to lunch and promised a year from now, you're going to have this baby. So if you look at the whole timeline, you know that Sarah had to leave this palace and sleep with her husband and get through a whole mountain of junk in the trunk, right? To be able to come to that place where she considered him faithful who had promised. And God was, I mean, look at what God did. Here she is. She's in this palace, Abimelech's palace, and God comes to him in a dream. And literally overnight, he can't sleep immediately. First thing in the morning, he calls his advisors. Then he calls Abram and he's like, why did you lie to me? And then he gives her back. I think it's that very day. Look at how God did this miraculous thing. It can look so dark. And you just don't even know what God can do. And I want people to be inspired by Sarah's story, by your story, by all these guidepost stories, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, all the things that God can do. Tell us about that moment when God just turned everything on its head. And in that 3 minutes time period, I mean, I got to hear that story.
Oh my gosh. It was so crazy. It was so crazy. So we're separated and, the Saturday night before Easter Sunday, well, the week before Easter, our oldest daughter had her second child. And I had traveled up to Chicago to actually help her with the birth and to stay for a few days. Mark had stayed at the house with the boys because I was absent. You know, I was up in the Chicago area. Now, I had ridden the train up. So he had decided once the baby was born, he would bring the boys up and they would see this new little one in our family. And then because I had ridden the train up, I would just ride back with them. Now, this is all very uncomfortable, very uncomfortable because all of our kids are very hurt by Mark. They're very, I mean, they're trying their best to love their dad, but it was difficult.
If it was me, control girl me, I'd be thinking, making plans. I'm going to sit in the back seat. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I just would have arranged it that way. No, I'll sit in the back. You can sit up in front with dad. That's what I would have done, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That kind of awkward. And so when we got back home, we got back home extremely late, like 2 o'clock in the morning. Mark had another 20 to 30 minute drive home. And I was concerned. He's one of those that can fall asleep at the wheel. So I was like, would you like to just stay at the house tonight and then you can go home tomorrow? And he said that probably would be wise. So he stayed at the house that night. And so the next morning's Easter, our boys get up and they get themselves to church because one's on the worship team and one runs sound.
What? And this is Easter morning.
It's Easter morning.
Oh, and, my goodness.
And so I, you know, they get themselves to church. It's just Mark and I alone in the house. And Mark comes into the room that I'm in and he says, I just want you to know. Oh, he's carrying a piece of paper. And he said, he had this blank piece of paper and he'd drawn a line down the middle. And he said, so this is my yard and this is your yard, pointing to each side of the paper. And he said, and this line is the fence. And we've been meeting at the fence. but I don't want to meet at the fence anymore. And I don't want you in my yard, and I don't want to be in yours. And so I just want you to know I'll be filing for divorce this week. And I was just stunned. And also, Lord, I don't know what to say to this. And so I was quiet and praying, just praying. And finally, the only thing that like just, it just came out of my mouth. And I said, you know, Mark, Jesus didn't want to go to the cross, but when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, he had to battle that. And then he surrendered and said, not my will, but yours be done. And Mark just stopped for a moment and he goes, is today Easter? He was so clueless. Like he was so checked out.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, today is Easter. And he sat there for the longest time. And he said, oh my gosh, I'm going to pray that. And he later told me that the Lord spoke to his heart as he's holding that piece of paper. And on the other side of the paper was actually a list of everything that was wrong with our marriage and specifically everything that was wrong with me. And he had literally been carrying that list around for a long time. Mm-hmm. And he heard the Holy Spirit say, Mark, if you'll trust me, if you'll trust me for the list, I'll take care of the rest. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, he is so internally at the end of himself. He is so desperate for peace, and he's so desperate to just stop the craziness, which at that point, the other relationship had started to have conflict. And so he's starting to go, oh, maybe this really isn't the answer. But then he's going, I've made such a mess. It's too big to clean up. So all of that has been going on inside of him. I don't know that.
He's got his, how many semi-trucks into this relationship too?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so then that's the moment. And he literally just said, Lord, I have made a huge, huge mess. I am so sorry. It's been all about my will, and I want it to be about yours, not my will, but yours be done. And literally that was, it just kind of happened, and I'm watching it, and I'm literally watching like almost this physical change take place in him. And he finishes praying. He looked up at me and he said, could we go to church? And I said, sure. And I'm not trusting what happened, but I'm like, something has happened. And so we go to church. And as you can imagine, we walk in the door of church and our boys' eyes are as big as baseballs.
Yeah.
This is the church Mark was the pastor of for 10 years.
Wow.
They have known that he's not been in a good place. They've been praying for him. So
talk about a resurrection Sunday.
I'm telling you, he had his
goodness.
We say that he had his own personal resurrection.
He did.
And
I mean,
that
like that is the story. Jesus was dead.
Yes.
And he then lived. You know?
Yes.
Sarah's womb was dead. And it produced a baby, like a tomb where a baby was born. And your husband was like
dead.
The marriage was dead for, I mean, there was no pulse.
Yeah.
And yet God broke his heart. And it started with, I mean, I think all of us, the reason that we hold on to control, the reason that we white knuckle and we, you know, make our little lists and draw our fence and your fence and all, like what we're looking for is we want peace, you know, we want joy. We want security. And those things elude us when we are trying to get for ourselves.
Yep. It's not until we get to surrender that we get them.
Yes. It's like picture your hands like gripping onto control, you know, white knuckles.
Yep.
Trying to keep, to get and keep and hold on to control. But it's only when we open our hands and saying, not my will, but yours be done. Like surrender is the way we receive all those things that we're looking for when we're trying to take control.
Yeah. It is.
What
it is.
Amazing story. You know, Jill, too, what I love about it is 1 Corinthians 13 says that love hopes all things, and believes all things.
Yes.
Like that moment walking into church, I can imagine there would be some women who would say, no, I'm not going to church with you. I'm not available. Like, we'll see if this is real. We'll see if it sticks. You know, just you hoped all things. You believed in the God who raises people, marriages, situations from the dead. I love that. And that was born in all of the days and the hours of crying and dealing with kids in the middle of the night and all that, like all of those moments of surrender in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very true. So true. And you know what was so powerful? So when church finished, Mark said, could I spend the afternoon with you and the boys? And I'm still thinking, I don't know what happened exactly here. And I don't know that I can trust it, but sure, you know, so he does. And that evening, we are sitting, chatting, and he says, I can't even remember what was on the list. Like, it had no hold on him anymore. It truly the letting go. And it was another 2.5 months before he moved home. You know, we began counseling again. We began to put the broken pieces back. And even after he moved home, it was still another, about 14 months of counseling. It was about an 18-month healing period for us.
Yeah.
But
there's wisdom in that, you know, wisdom. There's a lot to work through.
Exactly.
And yet the beginning was that thing that came to life. I just got to ask, okay, so this paper that he's been carrying around, did he keep it in his wallet? You know, where was it? And what did you do with it?
You know, it was in his journal, but he ended up burning all of his journals because his journals, they were just ruminating bitterness. It was not helpful. And so he ended up burning all of the journals.
I think there are probably some memories that you had to burn too. You know, like you're telling your story, but you're telling it from the point of redemption. I mean, I think there are some of us who tell our stories still with a lot of bitterness. But what I see in both of you on both sides of this marriage is two people who considered him faithful, who'd promised, like surrendering and giving God this marriage and watching it come to life.
So grateful.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for having me and allowing me to do that.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jill and really all four of these amazing stories of faith that we've gotten to hear. All four of them are part of my new study, Shaped by God's Promises. So I hope that you'll pre-order that book. It comes out very soon. And study along with us the life of Sarah from Genesis 12 through 21. So with the podcast, we're going to now segue to a series on comparison, and then we'll come back to the series, the Sarah series, here in about 6 weeks. So we're kind of toggling back and forth, and I'm trying to arrange these different podcast series around the launch of two very exciting book launches. So thanks for sticking with me. I hope that you'll be back for the comparison series, and then more on the life of Sarah. Can I just remind you that each of these stories from the Bible is absolutely true? Rather than giving us a list of facts to memorize about himself, God gave us a book filled with stories, and each one helps us to know him and to understand this overarching story that we are all in. So I hope that you'll take some time looking at this story in your Bible. To help you study, I've put together my free Live Like It's True workbook, which includes my False Narratives watch list, my Story Elements bookmark, and more. Live Like It's True is part of the Resound Podcast Network. For more gospel-centered resources, visit resoundmedia.cc. We've got that link for you, along with links to any of the other resources that we've mentioned in the show notes. Thanks so much for joining me. And now it's time to go live like it's true.